welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. This is Stephen Dickens, and he's a global sales leader with IBM, and he deals with Linux One and HyperProtect. So what does that involve, Stephen?
Yeah, Nate. So my role within IBM is I've got a team of about 60 or 70 reps around the world in 7 different geographies, and we're presenting it to our clients. I should catch myself. We're presenting to our clients a high-end, open-source-based compute platform, and customers consume that either on-premises or via the public cloud.
Right. So we want to ace the sale, right? So have you got a practical methodology then for selling B2B enterprise software and hardware or services?
I think the biggest thing for me, and you know, assuming you're in front of a client, and we were talking earlier about prospecting and getting in front of clients and kind of how that world has changed. But let's assume you're in front of clients. I think from experience of doing this over 25 years and what works best with the reps we've got on the team, it's intimacy to your customer. It's one of my sales directors years ago said 50% of this job is turning up. And I genuinely believe that. Clients buy from people they've got good relationships with, they trust, and they believe are adding value. And also reps who genuinely care and have demonstrated they care throughout the sales cycle. I can point to numerous deals where I was a rep where customers placed purchase orders with me because they genuinely felt I was going to make their project successful and I'd got the resources lined up. So I think in the world where we've got things like this, like Zoom and WebEx, it's very easy for reps to go, oh yeah, I'll just dial into a WebEx with my customer.
Oof. They want to see them face to face, right? Yeah. If you're spending like tens of millions of dollars, yeah, or even $500,000 or perhaps even less than that, right? Like, you're going to want to see the guy, aren't you? Or the lady, yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it gets lost. The people are like, oh, why is the incumbent so hard to knock out of these accounts? Well, they've put the effort in. Yeah. You know, Bob, Fred, or Sally has spent their time on customer site, building long-term relationships, helping that customer navigate through their support organization, or being the one throat to choke when something went wrong, and making a little product installation issue go better. They've done all that in between the big sales so that when the next big sale comes along, it's like, well, we trust Sally because she looks after our business and she makes sure that it all works in the year after that we've bought it. Unless you're adding that value and being that trusted supplier to your clients, I think it's really tough to get customers to spend big money because they're making a bet on you and your company. And yeah, is it going to be successful? So I think, yes, you've got to leverage technology. Yes, you've got to do WebExes and Zoom meetings with your clients. And yes, you've got to email. But you've always got to ask yourself, and I always ask our reps, when are we next face-to-face in front of this client?
Yeah.
If you ask yourself that one question, I think you're going to see your sales success go up. Your percentages go up.
Right. So it's very much like territory management, isn't it? I mean, I used to do a lot of territory management back in the day, and I'd go to, you know, visit all sorts of customers. I used to drive all the way around the UK. Yeah, pretty much. So I had my sort of territories. And at that time, it was just like, well, you know, we need to get in there and see them probably, I think it was probably like once a month where you just drop in and like say, oh, hi, do you want to have a little taste of this product? So, you know, because I was selling like liqueurs and mead and like all these sorts of wines and stuff, and they absolutely loved it when you just dropped in and said hello, you know. But it must be a lot more difficult, I think, selling something that isn't it's not physical, right? But you guys have got all the promotional material, haven't you? So you can take them like a pen or a, oh, I thought you might want a selfie stick this month, John, or, you know, like, or a bag or,
I'll tell you a story to illustrate the point. We had one of the big customers in the UK when I was based in the UK that was based out of the headquarters was in the US. So they were our eighth biggest customer in the UK, but all the decision-making was made out of the US, or so we thought.
Okay.
I said, got given to me as a new account. And I'm like, oh, this is a big account. And the guy's like, yeah, don't spend any time on those. All the decisions are made out of the US. Ooh. I wouldn't even bother going to see them. And me being the contrarian that I am, I said to my boss, I said, I'm sorry, boss, but I'm going to go and see these guys.
Yeah.
They're the second biggest customer in my territory and the eighth biggest customer in the country, and no rep has called on them for 3 years. There's got to be something, because everybody thought all the decisions were made in the US. Well, I went and saw these guys and said, hey, I'll bring my pre-sales guy up with me. We'll spend a couple of hours, because it was a 4.5-hour journey for me. These guys were up in York it was a long way. So I wasn't going to go there just for an hour. I said, well, come in. We'll do a bit of a health check on what you guys have got and what works and what's not. They loved it. I went up to see them probably 20 times that year and ended up closing a $3.5 million deal with them. And we'd not done one deal with these guys in the 3 years prior. And my boss went, when I closed the deal, he's like, okay, you can tell me you told me so and that I was wrong. And it stuck with me as an example of, we did a $3.5 million deal off the back of me turning up.
Yeah,
they went and the UK CIO went and told his US counterparts, IBM have turned up. They want to work with me. They want to do business with me. I want to buy more of their software to deploy in the country. I want to fight for them for IBM to be a bigger part of my strategy, because this guy has shown up, brought his team, added value to me. And when I went up there, there was no chance of them spending any money. And the last 3 years would have proven that there was no chance. But we ended up with the $3.5 million deal. So don't believe that 1 minute spent in front of your customers is a minute wasted. It never is.
No, because they can always introduce you to other people, right? And they might move to other companies and all sorts of things, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the start of this of your practical methodology, right? Is first of all
turn up.
Yeah, turn up, right? And then it's basically just, if you're given a load of accounts, you need to first of all go and see everybody in that list, right? Secondly, you need to carry on stacking the pipeline, right? If you do both, I mean, because sometimes they have farmers, don't they? So they farm the accounts, and then they have new business people, right? So it depends on how that works, does it?
Well, it's interesting. I think, I don't know whether I agree with the hunter and farmer type of thought process. I think even in an existing account, you've got to act like a new business salesperson. Okay. So I've had single accounts before where I was the client executive for one account, spending $70 million a year with us. And we looked with me and the global client leader, sat down, looked at the account and went, who do we sell to? So he was, the company operated in four countries. He was doing about $200 million. I had his UK number and we were doing about $70 million. And, we sat down and we went, who were we selling to in the account? And the CIO, I think, had eight direct reports. And we were exposed to maybe two of those direct reports. So we're doing $70 million out of a quarter of the CIO's reports, direct reports. So I went to the global client leader. I said, why do we not talk to the others? And his reaction was, well, no reason. We've just never spoken to them. So I took it as one of my actual formal measures that year that we would build a relationship with the other six direct reports.
Okay.
And we got great business out of the others. And even, I think a couple of those, there was no linkage whatsoever. And we didn't kind of get any connection, but they were, oh, we're really glad you've turned up and we're really glad that your company's showing an interest in us, and let me introduce you to somebody else who I think you should talk to. So even of the eight, I think it was probably two, we didn't end up going past maybe the first one or two meetings with. I can only imagine when the CIO's got their leadership together and they're talking about my company, if I've got coverage of all eight of their reports, how much better I'm going to be talked about. Because it's like, oh yeah, they came in the other week, I had a quick chat with them, nothing really for us to talk about, but they sound like they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's still a better thing for that person to say than, oh yeah, I've never spoken to that company.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, otherwise your competition just go in there and do exactly that, and they show their face more and be more helpful and go in and close the business, right?
So that's the like thinking like a new business rep within an existing account. Look at the org chart and say, who haven't I spoken to? You know, there'll be the Bob, the Fred, the Sally, the Allison that you always speak to, and yeah, they've always spent money with you. Well, that's great. Keep that relationship. But always ask yourself, who else in the account am I not talking to? And if your answer is, I haven't spoken to them ever or in the last year, that's where you're making a mistake. Because that person could switch jobs with the person who's your key contact and you're left with no relationship.
Yeah. And then if they've got a relationship with someone else already, you're in big trouble, aren't you? So excuse me. So then we're basically talking about generating more leads, aren't we, which is what we talked about a little bit earlier, yeah, in our other conversation. So when it comes to generating more leads, yeah, you're big on social media, aren't you? And things like that. So in terms of doing that, you basically just need some great content. You need to build relationships and have conversations, right? I mean, that's in essence what we're talking about.
And people go, how do you have the time to be so active on Twitter? I mean, we have a lot of fun out there.
Yeah, we do.
And people go, how do you do it, Steve? And I'll give you an insight. I spent half an hour last night scheduling my tweets and my LinkedIn posts for the week.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what? You can do what? You can post them. And I just go, I've got a little app that tells me about what the news is, type in the topics I want to be known for, find news stories, schedule them for the week. And it takes me half an hour on a Sunday night. Yeah. I'm scheduled through Thursday right now. I've got to do another sort of 5-10 minutes to get Friday done. And what you'll get from me is 4 LinkedIn posts and 4 tweets a day.
Yeah.
Whether I'm on 12 hours of conference calls and got my hair on fire, this week you will see 4 messages a day on both platforms from me.
Yeah.
And they will look really good and they'll look super professional. And then if I've got a couple of minutes here and there as I'm running, you know, running around, I'll maybe put some content out myself. Yeah. So it's not hard to do this stuff and build a social following. I'm no expert. I mean, I defer to guys like you who are experts. I'm no expert doing this stuff, but I got 7,500 followers on Twitter. I got 2,500-3,000 people who follow me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a blog that gets a couple of thousand views a month. It takes me half an hour to write a blog once a month.
Yeah, but they're all very targeted, aren't they? The people that you're talking to and engaging with are all in the enterprise space. Yeah, whether it's software as a service, hardware as a service, you know, whatever, right? They're very, very specifically targeted. Yeah.
Yeah. So because I think people in that space want to talk to experts.
Yeah.
They want to spend their time with experts. And how do you work out whether somebody's an expert?
Well, you've got to ask them questions, right? I mean, we talked a bit earlier about like these acronyms and stuff. Yeah. And I actually said to someone the other day, like on Twitter, I was like, you know, why don't we just try and keep this, you know, so anyone can understand this conversation. And I got this response from some developer saying, oh no, I think devs should talk dev speak, you know? And it's like, well, yeah, but then you're leaving out like the business speak people, and they're the people who pay the bills. You know, not everyone wants to talk in dev language, right?
I think you've got to be as a salesperson, you've got to be a translator.
Right.
You've got to be able to, you know, I sell really technical stuff. I sell a big server that's got loads of widgets and gadgets. And I know about what my box does and I know how it does it.
Yeah.
But I got invited to do an internal presentation to our financial services team globally on their training. And I said, well, why did you come to me? And it's like, well, you can make all of that techie stuff sound like something we should care about.
Exactly.
And I was really grateful for the opportunity in a couple of weeks. And I'm building my deck out now to do that. But it's really just a case of you've got to be that translator. You've got to be able to put your techie gadgets and gizmos and widgets in a context that means something to a technical person, a mid-level IT manager, a CIO or a CEO. You've got to be able to kind of turn the dial of what you say to more techie or more business and be that translator. And that if you're not doing that for your clients, then, and you can only operate in that technical swim lane, more senior buyers just don't listen to you.
No, they're not interested, are they? It's like my brother used to work at Cisco in sales. Yeah. And he used to take this technical salesperson with him. Right. And he'd sit there and like, and he'd just say, look, mate, just don't say anything. Because if you say something, I'm going to lose this sale. Do you know what I mean? Because it was so dull, and you could just imagine like people just switching right off completely while this guy just waffles about, you know, tech.
Some of the chart decks I see IBMers try and use with clients, I'm like, whoa, that's not good. So I'm representing for our brand in front of, I think, 500-600 financial services. And I've got all the product managers going, oh, can you talk about my product? I'm like, I'm talking about no products whatsoever. And they're like, but we've got this really cool widget that we want to talk about, please. And I'm like, no. Nope. And they're like, but this is the most important widget of 2020. And I'm like, no. Nope. How do I get somebody's job it is to worry about financial services clients? You know, this will be the Barclays client exec to worry about my product range when they've got probably 50 product ranges in IBM to care about.
No.
They're not going to care if I turn up and go, look at my widget. It's really cool. You should be really interested in my widget. They're not going to be interested. If I can say, hey, look, I won this customer last year. It was a $50 million deal. If you get one of these in your customer, you'll do 2x your numbers. Do you want to talk about it? What are they going to say?
Well, they want some of that, don't they? I mean,
yeah. They don't want to. Now, we won that $50 million deal because our widget was really good. Mm-hmm. It's maybe conversation number 3 or 4. Where they need the deal. And like, exactly how did you do that deal?
Right.
Is maybe the conversation where we talk about the widget. We don't talk about the widget on the first 1 or 2 calls. It's all business outcomes, return on investment, growth of revenue, you know, those types of things that actually business people care about and technical people actually care about as well. Successful project delivery.
Yeah. Well, they have to, don't they? Otherwise, they're not they're not at the top of the C-suite, are they? I mean, but then you've got to have the technical people talking to the technical people, haven't you? Because then they make sure that there's a fit for what it is that you're selling, right? I mean, it's...
But I think it's how you guide your technical people. So, you know, some of the great pre-sales people on my team who can go as techie as the next person, they're really good technical sellers.
Yeah,
still know what their role is, where they fit. Go back to my analogy from our previous podcast where we're talking about how do you plan the bank heist? You know, how do you steal your commission back from your client who stole it on the first of the year? You know, if you look at Ocean's 11, there's some people in it. I always think of the little Chinese guy who fits in the box, who can get down the air conditioning vent. That guy doesn't speak a language that anybody can understand, but he's super useful on the team. He's the guy they put into the little suitcase and then they wheel him in and he sort of can get to the top and turn the alarms off. That person's really valuable in your team, but they don't speak a language that anybody else understands. That it's knowing how to when to put that pre-sales person into the spotlight with the right people in the room. That's the skill.
Got you. Got you. So is it easy then, really? If you come on,
I'm only 25. Just look at
don't tell anyone. No, come on. They need to think. It's so to ace the sale, right? Yeah. Following this methodology, right, is as long as they do enough activities, as in stacking the sales pipeline in the beginning, it all becomes relatively not easy, but it's doable, right?
It's easier. Yeah? I think inputs and outputs, focus on things that are increasing your pipe, increasing your exposure to your customers, get out in front of your customers, spend less time in sitting in front of your laptop and more time spent in front of your customers. If you can stick to some of those basics, I think, then when it gets to the end of the year, you're going to have more bigger deals in your pipe that makes it easier for you to hit your number. You know, if you want to sit there and go, oh, well, I spent the first 3 months of the year, you know, prospecting from my desk.
Right.
You're going to have it's going to be a hard year.
Got it.
There's nothing you can do in 9 months to catch back that up. If you spend all of January and February out there meeting new customers and on the road, then it'll be easier when you come to half year and year end close, because you'll have got some real customers that you're talking to. The ability for reps to get in front of customers is the single defining factor for who's most successful.
Right. Right. And that can be a combination, right? Of, you know, you can go and get introduced to people. You can
run a meetup. I got my teams running meetups. Go and run meetups. Go buy some pizzas on your corporate credit card once a month. Go and rent a room in a hotel, or use the meeting room in the local office. Put on a meetup from 5 till 7 every Thursday night, and just get a couple of interesting speakers. Even if that's not you, just get the coolest people you know. 3 agenda topics.
Mm-hmm.
And just blast it out to everybody you know and say, hey, we're having this discussion. Would you like to turn up?
Yeah.
You run it as a sales rep. That is not marketing's job.
No.
And all you do is you buy some pizzas and get them delivered, and people can eat pizza whilst listening to some cool presenters.
Yeah.
Guaranteed you will get leads out of that. So if you're struggling to get a territory kickstarted,
mm-hmm.
do 8 meetups in January and February.
It's a good idea.
10, 15 people to turn up to every meetup. You've had 100 people turn up to meetups in the first 2 months of the year. If you've got to touch 300 people to do 3 deals, you're already a third of the way there.
Yeah.
In the first 2 months of the year. And you'll hear about what customers are interested in, or you'll get business partners circulating around you. You'll create a virtuous circle. My team in the UK are doing this. They're running a meetup once a month. They're having 30, 40 new customers turn up every month.
That's cool. That's really cool. Is that in London, is it?
Yeah, it's in London.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool.
We'll get you invited, actually.
Yes, please. That'd be great.
Yeah, we will do. Yeah, I'll get Andy to reach out to you.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. I'm always interested in what's going on, you know. I just want to keep up with the knowledge. I mean, that's the thing, is it's keeping up with exactly what on earth is going on, right? And like what the tech
customers
does.
Are the same. Customers are the same. They want to – I've got to learn about blockchain. You can spend hours on the web reading blogs, or I can turn up to this session that IBM's running where they're talking about blockchain. They've got this really cool presenter. Oh, I'll turn up and listen to that for half an hour. I'm not going to buy anything.
Exactly.
But once they've turned up.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 months later, they're in the market for buying something.
Exactly. And also then the introductions that people make as well, you know, because it's not always about like what they're going to buy. Like sometimes it could be like even their mum or dad or next door neighbor, or they'd be like, oh yeah, I met this chap the other day and he does this and you need that. And it's just a person, and they just introduce you. Like that's the most powerful I've found in my life, you know. But so thanks. I really appreciate that. That's been super interesting.
Excellent. No, happy to talk, Nate. As always good to jump on a podcast with you. My background's not as fancy as yours, but maybe well, a bit of mics.
Next time, you know, I know you're going to just slay me. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.